I'm Marty Moscoway, and welcome to Radio Times. The consequences of overturning Roe v. Wade are going to be seismic. Last Friday's 6-3 Supreme Court decision, Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health, undoes almost 50 years of the constitutionally protected right to an abortion and sends the issue back to the states, where there will be a patchwork of laws. One obvious consequence is more women will be forced against their will to carry their pregnancy to term. What will the impact be on their emotional and financial lives, on their families, including their children? Our guest, Diana Greene Foster, has answers to that question. She's a professor and director of research at Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health at the University of California in San Francisco. She conducted long-term research on women and abortion and wrote about her findings in the 2020 book, The Turnaway Study, 10 Years, 1,000 Women, and the Consequences of Having or Being Denied an Abortion. Diana Greene Foster, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And I do want to talk about your findings from your study, but I want, first of all, to get your reaction, your overall reaction to the Dobbs decision, especially its impact on women seeking abortions.
So it definitely was not a surprise. The latest three justices were chosen for their opposition to abortion. So we sort of knew it was coming. We certainly had a good inkling from the leak, and yet it was still shocking because it really is a devastating shock to abortion rights in our country, to the whole mentality around abortion rights even.
Well, just a quick follow-up, and again, we will get to the study, but do you see more women then getting unsafe abortions or doing things that put their life, their health at risk?
This is certainly a concern, and I don't think we're going back to the pre-Roe era where there really weren't safe alternatives. Now there are ways that people can safely induce their own abortions by ordering medication abortion pills online, for example, and traveling to states that across state lines where they can get a legal abortion in a clinic. So there are more options now. I think there'll be a really awful transition period where the information about medication abortion pills hasn't gotten out, and desperate people will probably do terrible things. And I'm hoping that period is short.
Well, let me talk about the study. And this was done, obviously, during Roe, while Roe and Casey were in effect. What were you hoping to learn?
I was interested in the consequences for people of receiving an abortion primarily, because there was an idea that abortion hurts women, and we needed to look at that. Abortion is super common. Between 1 in 3 and 1 in 4 people, women get abortions. And if it hurts women, we really need to know. And if you want to study this, who do you compare people who have abortions to? You know, comparing people to people who've never been pregnant or have wanted pregnancies is not the right comparison group. So we compared people who were just over the gestational limit and denied an abortion, just under a gestational limit and received an abortion. So they were very similar at baseline. And when we follow them through time, we can see what are the consequences that one group got an abortion, the other group didn't.
Well, let's talk about the people that got an abortion. Did it hurt them?
No, we don't find any evidence that abortion causes mental health harm. We see a decrease in symptoms of anxiety and depression over time. The vast majority, over 95%, say it was the right decision for them. People even, as we call them, say they stop thinking about it, and the only time they think about it is when we call them for these interviews.
So remind them, right?
Despite the rhetoric, it is not, for most people, not a major event. It's something they did because they felt they needed to, and they move on.
For those people that were turned away, were they turned away because they were late in their pregnancy?
Exactly. Everyone was turned away because they were a little too far along. And what we see is that people who were turned away from sites with low gestational limits, some of them were able to travel to get an abortion. But most of these sites had limits in the second trimester, and there was no place for them to go. So they vast majority carried the pregnancy to term.
And did they not know they were pregnant, or they realized too late, or they had to jump through hoops so that by the time they decided they wanted a pregnancy, it was too late for them?
Yes, all of that. Primarily, the delay is kicked off by not realizing you're pregnant, and that can happen because you always have irregular periods, or you don't have symptoms of pregnancy, or you've got some chronic condition that has symptoms in common with pregnancy. And once you're a little bit late in recognizing you're pregnant, then all of the other delays snowball. So you have to travel farther, you have to raise more money, you have to take more time off work, and people are further delayed by all the, I mean, before the end of Roe, life was not easy for people who were trying to seek an abortion. It was already difficult, but this will make it much worse.
What was the emotional then impact of being denied an abortion, wanting one and being denied an abortion? How did these women deal with that emotional fallout?
So when we compare the mental health of people who received and people who were denied abortions, the mental health of people who were denied abortions is worse. So they have higher anxiety, lower self-esteem, lower life satisfaction for a short period. Over the 5 years, there's not a large difference in mental health, but there's a very large difference in other outcomes, in physical health, in economic well-being, in achieving aspirational plans.
What about the physical health? Well, what's significant about that?
I think it's just really shocking how much we underappreciate the risks of pregnancy. Because it's natural, we somehow downplay the sacrifice that people make when they're willing to gestate a baby and give birth. So it's clear from the medical literature that giving birth is much more dangerous than having an abortion, something like 14 times higher risk of death. And we see it in this study. A couple people died after birth, and nobody died after having an abortion. And it's not just the complications from the end of pregnancy. It's long-term, we can see worse physical health among the people who gave birth. Higher hypertension, greater incidence of various kinds of chronic pain, and just overall lower assessment of their own physical health.
You also found that there were financial costs. Obviously, it's very expensive to have a child, but there were financial costs as well. Obviously, if you have more children, it's harder to get back into the workforce and all the obvious follow-ups to that.
Yeah, this is consistent with what people tell us when we ask them why they sought an abortion. The leading reason is that they feel that they can't afford to have a child, or for the more than half of the people who get abortions are already mothers, the cost of supporting another child. And they're correct. We see that people who are denied abortions experience an immediate drop in full-time employment, and they are more likely to report for the next 5 years that they lack enough money to pay for basic living needs like food, housing, and transportation. So it's a long-term economic harm to people when they're unable to plan the timing of their kids.
As you mentioned, many of these women did have children. What was the impact then of essentially being forced to carry a baby to term? What was the impact on the children and the family?
Yeah, so it's another example of people being right at the beginning when they're trying to make a decision about having an abortion. About a leading reason is that they want to take care of the kids that they already have. And we see that those existing kids do worse if their mom is denied an abortion. They are less likely to hit developmental milestones. They're more likely to live in a household that doesn't have enough money for basic living needs if their mom was denied the abortion compared to kids whose mothers received an abortion.
And I'm curious about the bonding with the child, essentially the child that you wanted to have an abortion for. Did you look at that, the relationship between that mother and that child?
We did. So there's another set of kids, not just the existing kids, but looking at the child born when their mom was denied an abortion. And who do you compare that child to? We compare them to the next child born to women who receive an abortion. Mm-hmm. And this comparison lets us determine, well, what are the costs or benefits of being able to control the timing of your and circumstances of your birth. So the later, the pregnancies that were the births later to people who received their abortions were much more likely to have been planned, intended pregnancies. And the children born from to women who chose the timing of their births, those kids experienced better maternal bonding and lower economic hardship than the children born when their mom was denied an abortion.
You also found that there was a pattern of staying with an abusive partner or a partner that was abusive remain more likely part of the picture than if someone actually had an abortion. Help us understand that.
So another reason people give for wanting to have an abortion is that they don't think that the relationship with the man involved in the pregnancy is good enough to nurture and sustain a child. And we see that those relationships dissolve. They dissolve regardless, interestingly, whether the woman received an abortion or was denied an abortion. And when we look at experience of violence from that man, we see that about 1 in 20 experience violence from the man involved in the pregnancy. And when the woman receives an abortion, we see an immediate drop-off. And when she's denied an abortion, it's just level. So it's not that it increases, but they're unable to completely extricate themselves from this relationship. So we don't actually see that they're in a romantic relationship with the man, but right. that they have ongoing contact, and that ongoing contact means continuation of exposure to violence.
You looked at, and we're almost having a break here, you looked at women over, a 10-year period?
We followed each person for up to 5 years.
Right. And did you find over 5 years that some of the differences sort of evaporated or disappeared?
In terms of mental health, I would say that people are very resilient. They're resilient to the experience of an unwanted pregnancy. They mostly, over time, say that they're glad that they had this child, that they had preferred to have an abortion for the pregnancy. But people's emotional resilience doesn't extend to physical health resilience or economic resilience. So in measurable ways, we see people are worse off if they're denied an abortion compared to receiving one.
Well, we have to leave it there. Diana Green Foster, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times, helping us understand this really important study. Thanks for joining us. And again, our guest has been Diana Green Foster. She's professor, director of research at Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health at the University of California in San Francisco. Wrote a book a couple of years ago based on this study. It's called The Turnaway Study, 10 Years, 1,000 Women and the Consequences of Having or Being Denied an Abortion. We've got much more to talk about after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We're talking about the consequences of last Friday's U.S. Supreme Court ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade, the 49-year federally protected right to an abortion. It's estimated that 20 to 25% of Americans have had an abortion, most in the first trimester. Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health sends the issue to the states where there are already a patchwork of laws and regulations. A brand new CBS News poll found that 59% of Americans and 67% of women disapprove of the court's decision to overturn Roe, with a striking division along party lines. Coming up, I'll talk with Maria Gallagher. She is legislative director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Federation. Joining us now is Dr. Lisa Pereira. She's Chief Medical Director of the Women's Centers, providing abortion care at the Center's Philadelphia and Cherry Hill offices. Dr. Pereira, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, it is such a pleasure to be here. I'm such a fan of the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, let me just make sure our listeners can join us as well. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We want to know about your reaction to this decision overturning Roe v. Wade on Friday. Well, Dr. Pereira, let me begin with you. What is your greatest concern about the end of Roe?
I mean, my greatest concern is that I know that there are people that live in Mississippi, Alabama, all of the 26 states where abortion is banned, that are going to need abortion services and are not going to be able to get to a place where they can access them. And the biggest problem with that is what most people don't realize is that pregnancy is really dangerous, particularly in those states. Maternal mortality is incredibly high in Mississippi, in Alabama, and forcing people to continue pregnancies means that women are going to die because they're forced to have a pregnancy that they never wanted to continue in the first place.
Because they're going to die because of the pregnancy and perhaps poor health care, die because they might do something that puts their life in danger to end the pregnancy?
No, not die because of something they do to put their life in danger that ends the pregnancy. We have incredibly safe abortion medications now that can be accessed. I don't think we're in the same place as we were before Roe, where people were trying surgical techniques to end their pregnancies, but die because they continue a pregnancy and then have a complication of pregnancy that kills them. What most people don't realize is that it is 10 times more dangerous to have a pregnancy in childbirth than it is to have a first trimester abortion procedure.
Why do women, from the women that you have worked with that have come to your center for an abortion, why do they want an abortion? I was talking with the Turnaway Project about what women told her. What do they tell you?
Oh, my goodness. There are all sorts of reasons. And for me, like, I'm just going to say that as a person that's a mom that's had two pregnancies that has not had an abortion, but there are times in my life that I would have had one. Pregnancy is all about timing. So you're either in a place where you feel ready to be pregnant or you don't. And we had this option that is incredibly safe to make you not be pregnant if you find yourself to be pregnant. So people have abortions because the timing is not right, because they're in abusive relationships and don't want to have a lasting relationship with a person and be linked to a person that's abusive to them for the rest of their lives. They have abortions because they have a super desired pregnancy that had a really catastrophic, serious problem with the baby, and they choose to have an abortion instead of having a baby, going through through the pregnancy, and having that baby suffer after it's born. These are just some of the reasons that, like, every reason is valid, right? Like, who am I to decide, and who certainly are legislators to decide who has to continue a pregnancy versus not continue a pregnancy?
You work in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania, at least so far, abortion is legalized. Are you concerned that things will change, the laws will change?
I am incredibly worried. So in New Jersey, we're quite perfect protected, and we have great legislation that has codified the ability to have an abortion in the state of New Jersey. But Pennsylvania is very tenuous. And the funny thing about all of this, Marty, is that I'm a doctor who's helping people access these services, and the procedures are the same in both states. The process is that everything about having an abortion and the decision making for the patient and all that, that's all the same. But in Pennsylvania, getting an abortion is really different than getting an abortion in New Jersey. In Pennsylvania, if we do not elect Josh Shapiro to be governor, we will be like Ohio and West Virginia, and abortion will be illegal. That is just a fact. And furthermore, They are trying to pass a state constitutional amendment that is worded in a really confusing way to change the state constitution to make abortion illegal. And that will not be protected by a Democratic governor. So we really have to flip the legislators as well to Democrat.
Well, and we should say that Mastriano is running against Shapiro, and he's been pretty pretty out front, or very out front, about his opposition to abortion, just to make sure our listeners know what is potentially at stake here. Let me just make sure you know who we're talking
about. I'm sorry. Just to clarify, you're saying that Mastriano has been upfront about his opposition.
Yes.
I want to preface that, and I don't ever want to be a one-issue voter. But this issue is really important for people that get pregnant, and Pennsylvania will lose the access to abortion if Mastriano is elected.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Dr. Lisa Pereira, again, Chief Medical Director of the Women's Centers, providing abortion care at the Centers, Philadelphia and Cherry Hill offices. The second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. Getting reaction to Friday's decision, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled to overturn Roe v. Wade, essentially sending abortion back to the states. And again, we always want to hear from you. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Are you concerned about criminalizing contraception?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we can see from the things that Clarence Thomas said that it's not going to stop here with abortion. It's about rolling things back to a time where people couldn't make choices about their own bodies. Contraception is one of the things that gives people with a uterus bodily autonomy. I can see that happening. I hope it doesn't happen. Contraception, so everybody that's listening knows, my career has been based on helping people become pregnant when they want to have babies when they want to prevent pregnancy and to end pregnancies that they're not ready to have, or to end pregnancies that they want to have but they can't because they're sick or the baby's sick. And contraception is magical. People need to understand that it's not just about pregnancy prevention. It's about controlling menstrual cycles that are really heavy, helping people that have premenstrual syndrome. To take away this medication that, I think, and I'm a total, OBGYN family planning nerd, but I think that, contraception was one of the most magical inventions of all time. It has revolutionized the way, I'm going to say women, but I want to put out there that there are lots of people that don't identify as a woman that have a uterus, but I'm going to default to women because it's just less words. Easier to understand. But it allows women to control their destiny and prevent pregnancy when they don't want it, but also to just not be in excruciating, cramping menstrual pain during the workday. So to roll back that magical invention seems short-sighted, in my opinion.
Here's a tweet from Kara. Says, I have no regrets. Not for a second have I ever questioned my decision to terminate a pregnancy. My heart breaks for everyone who's had control over their body and their future ripped away from them. This does change almost everything when it comes to getting pregnant. And I wonder to you, Dr. Pereira, about having the state decide whether someone can carry a baby to term or not, or a fetus to term or not. How do you see that playing out?
I mean, people are gonna try to do what they can do to not be pregnant if they don't want to be pregnant. So people can now order medications online from other places to get those meds to cause an early pregnancy loss. That's what a medication abortion is. You use the first pill, mifepristone, and then you take four pills of misoprostol, which is a super common medication that's available in pharmacies. And it causes you to have bleeding and cramping like you're having a miscarriage. People are going to access those medications. And frankly, honestly, those medications are really safe. So that's not a bad thing for a person that doesn't want to be pregnant anymore. The laws don't make abortion go away. And for people that feel like they can access those medicines, it forces them to have a baby that they don't want to have. And yes, they're and I want to be clear, I work in a center that provides abortion care, in two of them, and I am the physician liaison for the other three of them that are part of our group. We are pregnancy centers. We help people that want to place their child for adoption. We help people that want to continue their pregnancies and have prenatal care. Most of the people that come to our door have given this thought and know they don't want to continue their pregnancies. But we definitely, we offer all options and help people get what they need.
I'm wondering, too, and just picking up on this idea of policing, and I was doing, some homework, some reading in preparation for the show, that the treatment for a miscarriage is essentially the treatment for an abortion, correct?
They're exactly the same. That mifepristone medicine and the misoprostol medicine that I just talked about are exactly the same. Not all doctors have access to mifepristone, though, the quote-unquote abortion pill, the medication abortion pill. But lots of doctors can just prescribe the misoprostol. And the misoprostol, if you give four pills and then you repeat the dose in 4 hours later, it's very effective. But mifepristone and misoprostol are more effective when combined for both miscarriage and abortion.
Is there concern, though, that someone could be having a miscarriage and the state, let's say, thinks it's an abortion?
Absolutely. There's always that worry. And we as healthcare, as folks that provide healthcare to women, know that pregnancy, like, we don't need to ask those questions. We don't need to criminalize people. If you walk into an emergency room with bleeding and a positive pregnancy test, you don't have to say, did you do anything? You just know that the person's bleeding and has an early pregnancy and you treat her like she's having a miscarriage. That's what you do. Like, there's no reason to criminalize people.
And that is Dr. Lisa Pereira. We are talking about Friday's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that overturned Roe v. Wade. And again, you can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And yes, you are listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. A number of these states that are really clamping down on abortion or making abortion illegal are going after providers. They decided that they will be the target of legislation. Are you concerned about that?
I mean, absolutely. My colleagues that live in Texas right now that provide abortion care are doctors that know how to help people, signed an oath to help their patients and respect autonomy, bodily autonomy, and they're not allowed to give medicines or do surgeries that they know how to do because they will be charged with a felony offense, a felony. And that is jail time. That is, losing your medical license for doing what you believe is right. So yes, of course, do I think about that? Am I concerned about that? We all are, right? But what I'm most concerned about is that our legislators think that they can legislate medicine and take away the option of a safe procedure. Let me just tell you a little story about some maternal fetal medicine doctors that I know. They're terrified in Texas and the states where abortions are banned. There are instances when people break their water at 18 weeks of pregnancy and they're incredibly sick, but the baby still has a heartbeat. That is an abortion. And if they complete that procedure, depending on who is determining what the threat to maternal life is, they could be charged with a felony. They're like afraid to save a woman's life because they could be charged with a criminal offense. You shouldn't have to think about that when you're providing medical care.
I mean, it seems the goal is to drive providers out of business. Do you agree?
It's not about business. It's to It's to end abortion. It's to ban abortion. It's to control women's bodies. It's not about money, in my opinion. And abortion care for me is not about money, not about driving anyone out of business. It's about doing care that people need, that is safe, that is it's just a natural right. It's a natural right. We're a country that prides ourselves in liberty and freedom. And you're not giving American people the freedom to choose what to do with their bodies, but you're giving them the freedom to walk anywhere they want, toting a gun. Like, it doesn't make sense.
We're almost out of time here, but I was also thinking, and others have said this as well, is that when you look at the kind of programs and services for children and their families, we have no universal health care, as you well know. We have no, you know, universal paid family leave. We have no living wage. We have no affordable, high quality child care. I could go on and on and on. But once a child is born in this country, families and that children are left to their own devices, largely speaking, unless they've got money, of course.
Yep, and you, that's exactly right. It further marginalizes people. I just feel like I also need to say, because there's been a lot of confusion after Roe v. Wade, Roe v. Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court, abortion is still legal. Please, patients, please, people out there that find yourself to be pregnant, don't think that it's illegal. It's legal in Pennsylvania now. It's legal in New Jersey. It's legal in New York, California, many states it is legal. So please call an organization like the National Abortion Federation. Certainly go on the Women's Center's websites. There are options. There are people that are trying to help pay for transportation and donate money to help people get to where they need to go, to take them to the clinic if they don't have a ride, to let them stay overnight in their guest room. Just know that it is still legal, and we are open, and we are here to take care of you, and we want to give you the best, highest quality abortion care that you deserve.
We have to leave it there. Dr. Lisa Pereira, thank you for joining us on Radio Times. Really appreciate it.
It has been such a pleasure, Marty. Have a great day.
You too. And thanks so much for joining us again. Chief Medical Director of the Women's Centers, providing abortion care at the center's Philadelphia and Cherry Hill offices. A very short break, then I'll be talking with Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court decision last Friday that overturned Roe v. Wade. That, of course, is the 1973 landmark ruling that gave constitutional protection to women seeking an abortion. The court sent the decision to the states where there will be and are currently a patchwork of laws and regulations. Abortion in Pennsylvania is legal through the 24th week of pregnancy with some restrictions. A consultation with a doctor, a 24-hour waiting period, and parental permission if you are under 18. The Republican-controlled state legislature has introduced bills to limit abortion access, and there's an amendment that could be on the ballot next year that says the state constitution does not guarantee the right to an abortion. Joining us now is Maria Gallagher. She is legislative director for the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Should abortion be made illegal in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think that there should be protection for all preborn children and their mothers from the harm of abortion. I mean, we've seen in Pennsylvania alone that 32,000 children die each year from abortion. That's a staggering figure. Think of all the kindergarten classes that would contain. I mean, it's just astounding that we have such loss of life in the Keystone State. We want to see protections for those precious preborn children and protections from their mothers as well.
What are those protections? What are you actually talking about?
Well, we want to see a constitutional amendment which ensures that there's no right to taxpayer funding of abortion or a so-called right to abortion under the PA Constitution. And that would just give us the status quo. We were forced into this situation because abortion operations decided to file a lawsuit in state court asking for an end to Medicaid restrictions on abortion. We believe that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court might go beyond that and declare a so-called right to abortion, which does not exist under the PA Constitution. And so we need to be prepared for that.
Ending Roe, of course, is not going to end abortions. What steps, then, do you think the state, the legislature, or a governor should take or would take to prevent a woman in Pennsylvania from having an abortion?
Well, I think that it's very important that we have the safeguards that we already have in place, which we could lose under a state Supreme Court ruling. Those safeguards do include the 24-hour waiting period for abortion, the informed consent for abortion, where women are told the risks of abortion and alternatives to abortion, the parental consent for abortion. All of these are important protections. The ban on late-term abortions. I mean, we saw where Kermit Gosnell in West Philadelphia violated those protections, and thankfully he was brought to justice, and he's now in jail. But we want to see those protections in place for pregnant women and their babies.
Well, yeah, we did several shows about Gosnell. He is in prison for murder, where he should be, and what he was doing was a complete outlier when it came to abortion care. But nonetheless, I just wanted to, you know, make sure our listeners, though, understand that. I do need to understand, though, when you're talking about abortion in Pennsylvania, about whether you look to Texas or some of these other states to come to some kind of guideline for where you think abortion should be, or whether it should be made illegal in Pennsylvania?
Well, abortion is the taking of an innocent, unrepeatable human life. It shows that we have failed women. Women deserve much better than abortion. If you go to a website like abortiontestimony.org, you see the thousands of testimonials from women who have had abortions and who regret them now. We shouldn't have a situation where women have to choose between their child and their health care, their child and their education, their child and their job, their child and their relationship. We need to help pregnant women in difficult circumstances. And that's why I'm so very thankful that there are so many pregnancy resource centers which provide everything from diapers to daycare referrals, from mentoring to maternity clothes to pregnant women in difficult circumstances.
I quoted earlier on with a previous guest, and this is a brand new CBS poll finding that, and we've been talking about women here, that 67% of women actually disapprove of the court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. So while there might be some individuals who regret having an abortion, for most women, and this was also true in a Turnaway study, 95% of the women who had abortions after 5 years said it was the right decision for them. Can you respond to that?
I would be happy to. First of all, there was a Rasmussen poll that came out which showed that 50% of likely voters approve of the Supreme Court decision returning the abortion issue to the states. And also, I think the Turnaway study was deeply flawed. It was a small sample. There were people who dropped out of it. And I know the lived experience of women that I've had the profound opportunity to sit with and to talk with. I've seen their tears after their abortions. I've seen their heartache after their abortions. These are women who are grieving the loss of their children. We must pay attention to them and we must listen to them.
Well, isn't that what choice is about, which is helping women make the decision that is best for them? Obviously, there are consequences depending on what stage of life someone is in, the reasons they either want to have a child or they want to have an abortion, but that the choice is really the critical matter when it comes to a woman and their right to an abortion.
I'm very glad that you mentioned the issue of choice, because in so many cases, the women feel as if they have no choice. they're making a decision that they don't want to make. And in fact, there are so many cases where women are pressured by a boyfriend, a husband, maybe even a parent or a grandparent, to have an abortion that they don't even want. Forced abortions are illegal in Pennsylvania. We need to get the word out about that because so many women face pressure to have an abortion that they're not asking for. What they want is support. And there was a study which showed that the vast majority of women who had abortions who regretted them said if just one person had said that they would support them in their pregnancy, they would have gone through with that pregnancy.
I agree with you that there are clearly some women who regret having abortion, but can you agree with me that there are some women who do not regret having an abortion and it was the right decision for them?
I think it's a sad state of affairs that when we don't recognize the humanity of the unborn child. And I think that we have some work to do in terms of education, letting people know about that precious heartbeat, about brainwaves being detected 44 days after conception, that at 6 weeks after conception, the unborn child looks like a miniature doll, and that the child should be protected in the womb. And I think that we need to minister to women, to help women that face the difficult task of healing after an abortion.
From your perspective, when does life begin, if I can use that phrase, or when does a zygote become a human being?
It's a scientific fact that life begins at conception, and so we need to protect life from that very moment of conception to the moment of natural death, and to restore legal protection for preborn children, and to help their mothers in all circumstances.
Does that mean you oppose certain forms of contraception?
We don't get involved in that issue. We're just laser focused on the issues of abortion, infanticide, euthanasia.
But contraception, if there could be some consensus on contraception, then which of course prevents pregnancy, couldn't there be some progress on this particular issue?
I think we've made tremendous progress on the issue. I mean, we see where so many women have found support and understanding and help through so many pregnancy resource centers around the country. We have seen where a U.S. Supreme Court decided that the issue needed to go back to the individual states. I think that there has been a large decrease in the number of abortions in Pennsylvania with the passage of the Abortion Control Act. The abortion rate was cut in half in Pennsylvania, so we are making progress.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Maria Gallagher. She's legislative director for the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Let me just read a couple of comments from our listeners. Celeste said, this is forced birth by power of the state. What will become of women who try unsuccessfully to get an abortion? Will the state then detain a woman? Will there be pregnancy detention centers? She says this is all very terrifying and wrong. And it does, if abortion becomes illegal, then of course the state, the law does get involved in trying to police who gets an abortion or what to do if they do get an abortion. How do you see that playing out, Maria?
Sure. The pro-life movement stands strongly with women, and we do not want to criminalize women. We want to help women in these challenging circumstances. And so we do not believe in sending women to jail if they've had abortions. We don't believe in taking any criminal action against women who suffer the loss of their child through abortion. And we want to make that very, very clear.
Do you want to criminalize, though, providers?
We want to see that those people are held accountable who perform abortions, which are the taking of an innocent human life.
That's murder, correct?
It is under the legal definition of murder. It's the taking of an innocent human life.
Here's what I've never quite understood. If a mother, I hate to use this example, but murders her 4-year-old child, she's held responsible by the state for her actions. You're saying that life begins at conception, but somehow it's different, a different set of laws if a woman chooses to have an abortion while she is pregnant. I don't understand the distinction that you're making.
Well, we see that the woman is a victim of the abortion. particularly in those cases where the women were pressured into having abortions, they're victims as well. And you can't punish a victim like you can punish a perpetrator. And that's why we have the stand that we do.
So every woman, no matter whatever decision, how they feel about it, they, from your perspective, they are all victims?
They are victims of the abortion industry.
So they don't have kind of agency to make this decision themselves?
Well, I think often they are lied to, unfortunately. They aren't told the development of the preborn child. They may not see an ultrasound of their preborn child. They may not be given information about access to resources for themselves and their families. And you can't make an informed decision if you're lied to.
But there is plenty of information, you know, out there on social media. Obviously, some much more responsible than others. But there's lots of information that women can use to make a cogent decision for themselves.
I think, unfortunately, women are not told the risks of abortion, and they're not told alternatives to abortion in far too many cases. We are fortunate in Pennsylvania that we have a law. We hope that the abortion industry is following that law. But I don't think that women have access to all the information that they need. And I don't think that they realize necessarily the impact that that abortion is going to have on their life and the grief that they may suffer as a result of the loss of that precious, unrepeatable child.
Even though, and I'm repeating myself here, but just even though for some women, it from their perspective, this was the correct decision that they made for themselves.
I think that it's important to realize that abortion is the taking of an innocent human life. And I think that we need to get that message out to people, to show them the development of their preborn child so that they can make informed decisions.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me read a couple of more comments from our listeners. Dan says, what is the parental consent to abortion? Do you mean the man having a say over the woman's body? This has to do, Maria, correct, in Pennsylvania, for someone under 18, they need parental consent?
That is correct.
Anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think that it's very important that parents have some involvement in these decisions because the parents have to live with the consequences of the decisions that are made with regard to abortion on their minor girls. And they need to be informed and they need to provide their consent if this is going to take place.
Here's a question from Joan. She says, what about women who want a child, are happily pregnant, and have a miscarriage? They can now be prosecuted for having an abortion instead of having a miscarriage of a non-viable fetus to term. And this was something I was talking with our abortion provider as well, in that they use the same medications for a miscarriage as you would for a medication abortion. Concerns that somehow the state, if the state gets involved, they would see that miscarriage as some form of a crime. Can you respond to that?
Sure. There is no effort to criminalize miscarriage management. Miscarriage management would not be illegal, and it's a travesty that people are putting forth that trope.
We're almost out of time here. There is, I guess, in the works or some kind of process to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot. What should our listeners know about it?
Sure. The constitutional amendment requires passage in both the Pennsylvania House and the Pennsylvania Senate in two consecutive sessions, and then it's put on the ballot for voters to decide.
And what will it say in a nutshell?
It will say that there is no right to taxpayer funding of abortion or any right relating to abortion under the PA Constitution, because abortion is simply not in the PA Constitution.
Well, we have to leave it there. Maria Gallagher, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She is legislative director for the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, as we got reaction to Friday's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that overturned Roe v. Wade. That, of course, the 1973 landmark ruling that gave constitutional protection to women seeking an abortion. To replay this hour, many more hours of Radio Times, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under programs. You can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.